This is Packer and Durham on ACCM and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. And if you haven't heard, we are presented by New York Life. Wes, what's happening?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you excited?
I'm
excited this morning.
There were rumors from the smart people up in Bristol that there's a possibility that there could be a sponsorship tied in. So anytime, we've said this from day one. This is show 363. There will not be another show in the history of ESPN that will be more open to sponsorship opportunities. And so the fact that New York Life has come off the hip and they're now tied into this, we cannot thank them enough. So tip of the hat to New York Life as we get cranked up for the next 2 hours, 58 minutes and 12 seconds.
Got to be honest too, folks at New York Life, good morning. Wonderful to have you on the program. Excited for the association. We got to get some stuff for the shelves. We got to get some New York Life things for the New York Life shelf.
That's it.
Right up here. I got a lot of stuff up here, but I need New York Life things. We need some New York Life things to go back there by Josh Pastner and the welder's mask.
That's exactly right.
Get some New York Life type stuff.
That's how we roll.
We're looking forward to a long and healthy and prosperous relationship with Packer and Durham.
That's it. And this is true for any sponsor. We've said this from day one. I mean, Bojangles comes on board. So what do? We stick the Bojangles biscuit right there on underneath the NC State singlet. There it is. See over there in the corner?
That's right.
Right there with Fuller's sound asleep?
Yeah.
Bojangles. Food Line was involved for a while. We had Food Line stuff in here. We had paper bags.
Food Line's coming back this morning. They'll be back at 9:45.
That's how we roll. I'm going to say it again. I will put our sponsorship opportunities and marketing abilities up against any show in the history of ESPN. I will challenge any show ever on ESPN. You won't come close to how we're going to blow you guys out of the water. So New York Life, welcome aboard. All right, let's get to work.
Yep.
You ready to roll?
Great to have you.
Yep.
Can I just say this, that our own company went 10:05 on us yesterday?
Sure did.
Can I say that?
Sure did.
Our own company, the worldwide leader in sports, and the Lumberjacks can correct me if I'm wrong. It may have been out in some deep internal secretive memo that got released up there amongst producers and folk like that. But yesterday at 10:05, ESPN.com and the good folks at FPI, who live next door to the folks at BPI, released the 2021 projections. The football power index is out. And guess what? They got Clemson as a 72% favorite to win the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Well, I will tell you.
Stunning.
I will tell you, though, we're going to get in all this stuff. I thought the fact that Clemson was the favorite is not the surprise.
Correct.
However, the number that did surprise me was 72%. Because if I am mistaken, I could be wrong. That number seems lower than what it's been in years past. Everybody goes, it's Clemson and everybody else. So it tells me that, no Trevor Lawrence, no Travis Etienne, and the fact that the league's probably going to be better. Clemson's still the favorite until proven otherwise, but it seems like, that number's coming a little bit closer to 50. I mean, for example, Alabama is a 51% favorite in the SEC, right? If you go through the numbers, I did part of this yesterday on the show. Oklahoma is at 62% is the favorite in the Big 12. That number seems lower than in years past. Ohio State is the favorite in the Big 10 at 54%. That number, without question, seems a lot lower than it has been in the years past. Oregon is the favorite in the Pac-12 at 46%. So my point is, I don't think it was surprising to see who the favorites were, according to FPI. What I thought the more important number was that the percentages were a little bit lower than what we've seen in the past. So maybe, just maybe, since we talked about the ACC, perhaps there will be a little bit more parity at the top. Again, I think the dudes with the paw on the side of their helmet have the best players. They've got the momentum. They've got everything going for them. They are the team to beat, without a doubt. Now, can they lose? Well, sure. Anybody can get beat. That's the way the world works. But the fact that Clemson at 72% Not that Clemson was the favorite, but 72, I thought, was the number to kick around. But I will say, Wes, real quick, when FBI came out with that yesterday at 10:05, my sides were hurting from laughing out loud at 10:07 because I got past the conference stuff and started looking at the actual rankings because they ranked everybody. And there were some teams in the top 10 that I'm like, please, please. I mean, when I see a team like Mississippi State, who, by the way, NC State plays the second week of the season in Stark Vegas, Mississippi State was eighth in the country. Now, again, call me crazy, presented by New York Life, but they only won three games last year in the regular season. I don't care if Mississippi State brings back the greatest players of all time from Stark Vegas and put them on one team together. They're not, you might
like
try
Dak
to
Prescott, a quarterback.
Well,
and,
you go as far back as you want. Right. There's no way in the world they're the eighth best team in America. You can try to convince me they're the eighth best team in their league. Fine. Eighth in the country? Come on. It's laughable. It's so funny that when I went off on this yesterday on radio, Jackie Sherrill sent me a text when I was going off on it. And even he said, well, Pack, they got a real good kicker and a real good punter. And I'm like, I don't care if they got Ray Stinking Guy. And they're not the eighth best team in the country. I'm sorry. I mean, good people, good barbecue, cowbells if you're in the mood. But that is not the eighth best team in America. But that's for another network to have fun with. That's not our deal. So, yeah, I digress.
Or do specials on it. All right. Here's the one thing I will say about FPI. They did recognize that 8 of the 10 reigning champions in their respective conferences are expected to repeat. But here's the other wrinkle that I think we all knew was coming, too. The Coastal, chaotic. Mm-hmm. Now, the Coastal, come on, folks. If you followed ACC football with any inkling whatsoever, you know that the Coastal is going to be up for grabs because that's just what it does. Now that we're going back to divisions, let's settle on in and watch the Coastal do the Coastal, right? Because North Carolina's picked to be the favorite, but there are three other teams that have better than a 10% chance, including Miami, 28%, Virginia Tech, 19%, Virginia, 11%. Okay, Carolina the favorite at 37% to win the Coastal. There'll be somebody else that's going to get in this mix too, Pack. I mean, could be Georgia Tech. Who knows? Bottom line, this is a far from done deal. Pittsburgh's not even on there, and they bring back Kenny Pickett and a pack of people. But they lose a lot of heat on defense, as we all know.
I will say what I said yesterday. The other 10:05 that we had fun with yesterday, and that was North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Friday, September 3rd.
Yeah.
It's a game, in my opinion, that from a national perspective, given all the high-profile games to start the season, it will probably get lost in the hype as far as the national deal. But the implications it has on this league for the first game, and knock on wood, what David Coburn, the athletic director at Florida State, said yesterday regarding attendance in the fall. If we can get everybody back, ready to roll, Blacksburg, when everybody's excited, start the season, always an incredible place to watch a game. Pressure will be on Justin Fuente and the boys to have a good year. North Carolina, Virginia Tech have had incredible games the last couple years. North Carolina's going to receive a ton of hype as far as top 10, top 15 in the preseason. That game has such huge implications in the Coastal. And it is game one on a Friday night in Blacksburg to start it off. I can't emphasize enough what a big deal that game is going to be.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Of note, the ACC also has three of the top six non-conference games this year, according to FPI. The first two, you know those. Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, Miami. Those are week one. And then the venerable rivalry between North Carolina and Notre Dame. I'm kidding. But the Tar Heels and Irish have ended up in the same circles a lot here recently. But to have those two games, Pack, those two headliners in week one, be part of, you know, two of the bigger non-conference games, three of the top six non-conference games involving the ACC. Now, all of a sudden, at least according to the FPI, the ACC's packing a little punch when it comes to the non-conference slates.
Well, that would be true, but I will also emphasize this. Anybody can schedule somebody. If you want to change narrative, you have to start winning games. And for a league that was 0-6 in the bowls, it's been kind of a Clemson and everybody else. Again, last year the Irish were tied in the conference. This year they are not. You know, scheduling is one thing, and the ACC has never had a problem stepping up and scheduling folks. The question is, if you want to get into the national conversation, winning games of note is the only way to change it. And so, you know, Clemson doesn't have to change their narrative. We know what they're all about. Clemson, Georgia will be awesome. It always has been. It always will be, given their proximity, fan bases, teams, history, tradition, all that stuff. It doesn't matter if the game's in Charlotte, Athens, Clemson, Atlanta, which you're going to get a dose of all of that here in the upcoming decade. It will be awesome. And for a team like Miami, Wes, hey, you want to see where you stand? Well, guess what? The defenders are in Tuscaloosa. Yeah. And yeah, you know what? They don't have some of the pieces from an incredible team last year, but I got news for you. Coach Saban down there does a pretty good job in recruiting, and they're going to replace one five-star with another one. And if you want to find out just how good you are, that's a pretty good sample in week one for actually both of these teams from the ACC. Clemson, Georgia will be an absolutely awesome game, and Miami will find out just exactly where they stand big picture after week one against Alabama.
By the way, I heard on a another show on another network that Alabama will be an easy 2-touchdown favorite in that game.
Well, they probably will. I mean, I'm not a Vegas guy, as you well know, but that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, you know, Miami's got – it's going to be an interesting – listen, Miami's got their spring game here on ACC Network this week. It would be worthy of your time to keep an eye on Manny Diaz. Of course, De'Eric King, how's he doing? When we had Manny on the other day, we was talking about how great he's doing in the rehab. He's got to be 100% ready to roll, right? I mean, you got to have De'Eric King to go. But Miami's got athletes. But Alabama's got tons of athletes. But they're going to be breaking in a new quarterback and other pieces coming off one of the most explosive, dynamic offenses you'd ever want to see last year. And, you know, if you're going to play Bama, probably playing them in week one is your best shot, would be my guess. But for Miami, they know exactly what they're up against. But, again, for the league, there's some high-profile games right out of the gate. Should get everybody excited during the summer.
I don't know if this is possible. FPI is it – and Drew or Josh can tell us this morning. FPI, are they right next door to BPI? Is that kind of the way that works up there in the PI building, if you will?
Area 51. Bristol?
Is that right? FPI?
Area 51 on the campus. The dark building with no windows. BPI, FPI. They have their own parking.
I'm being told the FPI and BPI office locations are similar, but we can't talk about it.
Right. They don't even give codes. It's all fingerprints and laser to your eyelids. The only way you get in.
Retina scan. Yeah. Is that the way it is?
It's like
retina
James scans. Bond. It's like the James Bond version of the Bristol campus at ESPN. FPI, BPI.
That's it. Pack mentioned a moment ago, Florida State Athletic Director David Coburn coming up on our show at the bottom of the hour. If you missed our visit with David Coburn, it was outstanding. Really, really enjoyed our visit with the Director of Athletics at Florida State. We're going to replay that in case you missed it coming up at 7:30. And then the rest of our show looks like a lot of fun. We're going to talk to Duke lacrosse goalie Sophia LaRose, a native Californian, and another goalie at Duke. We'll ask her if she knows about Mike Adler and Sharks, but a lot of other things to talk to Sophia LaRose about. We're excited to visit with her. Tiana Manakahia will visit with us as well ahead of the WNBA draft, the great player from Syracuse. That comes up at 8:30. At 9 in the 9 o'clock hour, the coveted invite makes her triumphant return to Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life this morning. And then Docs Atkin will make his return at 9:30 from Virginia Lacrosse.
So
we got a few things with the coveted invite. You and the coveted invite have some things to work out.
Yeah, she sent kind of a, I'm not saying nasty note yesterday on Twitter, but I think she took offense to us putting her on the worst of the weekend because she didn't quite get the Florida State colors right. And so, you know, we'll have to see. You know, the coveted invite, I looked this up last night because I was just curious. It's been a while since we've had the invite on. And we got to go back to December 29th. So this will be her first appearance in the 21 calendar year. But we always love having Katie George on the show.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Okay, Manny Navarro and Andy Bitter, who are buddies of ours, been on the show several times from The Athletic. This is I'm going to say this at the top. This is a thankless thing to do, okay? Because all you're doing is just inviting criticism and questions, right? Some that are we're getting ready to offer to them. They decided to rank the ACC football head coaching hires since 1992. That's 49 people that have been hired to be head football coaches in the ACC since 1992. Now, Pack, would you agree that's that's an era where Florida State had massive success, was on the way to having massive success, 92, 93, 94, 95, then moving forward into expansion, things like that. This list was going to be all over the place from the start. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, that's why I like the list. I like the concept of the list because like you said, Florida State had an incredible, dominant run, not only within the league, but from a national perspective. Oh. Virginia Tech then kind of took the mantle for a while. Clemson wasn't Clemson as we know him today. Wake Forest had spikes. Everybody seemed to have a spike, right, for a short period of time, not like what Florida State and Virginia Tech were able to do and what Clemson's currently doing. So, therefore, you had some volatility in terms of, hey, we need to find the right guy for our job, you know, for the job at our respective school. Yeah. So it opens itself up for a lot of debate, which is why I liked the concept of the list. Now, people will scream anytime you do any kind of list article. If we come up with a list, it could be accounting. People lose their minds on accounting, and we just laugh. But, you know, it makes for a good debate. Let's put it that way. It gives you a lot of things to talk about. It's a perfect column for the quote-unquote downtime, if that makes any sense.
That's it. All right. 844-SAY-ACCN. If you've read it, you're probably already kind of positioning statements or concepts and opinions. If you haven't, let's give you the rundown. Basically, nobody should be surprised. Dabo Swinney is the number one hire. Now, remember, and we've talked about this, remember the landscape in 2008 when he got the job and not what has happened. Because it's important to remember the kind of land that Terry Don Phillips put Dabo Swinney on in 2008, in mid-October, hosting Georgia Tech, and then kind of what it's become now. It's a remarkable story, and it's a remarkable ascent, if you will, for Clemson into one of the three best programs year in, year out in major college football right now, and really kind of has been for the last half decade and change. The other one, I guess the one that would be the biggest surprise, David Cutcliffe is third on the list. Now, that would catch folks who are saying, well, wait a second. Duke went to a championship game. But you got to remember what he inherited, Mark, right? I mean, what David Cutcliffe inherited in Durham was one of the worst FBS programs in the country, Power Five regardless, at the time.
I don't think there's any question about it. They were the ultimate Power Five doormat is what they were. And I mean, and I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but it is what it is. There was nobody at the games. I used to kid around on the Southern Fried Football Tour. We'd go to a Duke game. I'll just park the RV in the end zone since Duke wasn't going to use it. We'll just tailgate there. That used to be the running joke. You want a seat? What section would you like? I mean, it was nonstop. Mm-hmm. Easy comedy, low-hanging fruit when it came to Duke football. And when I saw this list originally, when I saw what the title was, there were a couple names I was like, man, I wonder where so-and-so is going to be. I thought David Cutcliffe would have been in the top five. The fact that these guys ranked him third, more power to him, because David Cutcliffe has done a brilliant job in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
Culture, facility upgrade, branding. Yeah, have they been Clemson? No, but who is, right? Quite frankly.
Right. So,
but what they've been able to do, given the academic situation in a league in which everybody was running over them and putting in reverse and running over them again just to make sure they were dead, brilliant job right. by David Cutcliffe. I think he's one of the best coaches in college football. I've thought that for a long, long time, even before he got to Duke. But the reclamation project in Durham has been nothing short of sensational.
Well, he is 74-88 at Duke. He's 35-71 against the league in 14 seasons. But wait a second. In 10 games in 2013, but the 3 years prior to David Cutcliffe's arrival at Duke, they were 2-33 and 0-24 in the ACC. They didn't even know how to lift weights. I just think that what David Cutcliffe did was and is really a remarkable reconstruction of college football. And, you know, there were a lot of he's just been the perfect fit for Duke. By the way, I will add this. Only because he doesn't qualify on the list. Bobby Bowden is not eligible for the list because Bobby Bowden had the job at Florida State in 1992. Packer, how did you take Jimbo Fisher at 2 on this list, by the way?
I don't know if I would have put him at 2. He'd have definitely been in my top 5. And the reason I would have said that,
yeah,
and will say that, is because Bobby Bowden, legendary figure, great coach, changed college football in many respects. But the tail end of the Bowden regime had reached the point that even Florida State fans are like, oh, hey, you know, it's time for a change. And for Jimbo Fisher to walk in there, nobody ever replaces a legend. Nobody. I don't care where you are. And he had to pick up the pieces and basically put his own fingerprint on it. And it didn't take him long. Mm-hmm. And everybody goes, well, anybody can win at Florida State. Well, you know what? That's not necessarily true. We've seen that here in the last couple of years. Right. Not everybody can win at Florida State. It takes the right guy to get it going. Doesn't mean you can't get there. But Jimbo Fisher brought it back, and he brought it back in a hurry. He did an incredible job on the recruiting front. Yeah, I know it didn't end well, and Florida State fans don't want to hear about it. But, man, you know what? He brought you back to glory. And I'll go back to that 2013 team, one of the best football teams I've ever seen. Ever seen. Saw him in person, saw him in the national championship, saw him go down to Death Valley in that top five matchup and turn Clemson inside out. And they had a bunch of grown men. That was a great, not good, great football team. And, you know, he didn't get what he was looking for, and so he parted ways and went to A&M. Rest is history on that front. But he did, I thought, a tremendous job getting Florida State back to the elite level. And, you know, I know the snapshot wasn't as long as what we're talking about with some other coaches, but I thought Jimbo, for me, would have been a top five since 92, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dabo 1, Jimbo 2, David Cutcliffe 3. Ralph Regan of Maryland is 4, and Jim Grobe of Wake Forest rounds out the top 5. Those two jobs, people don't remember how good a job both those guys did at their respective institutions.
Totally agree. I don't know if I'd have had Ralph Regan in the top 5. I definitely would have had Jim Grobe. And Grobe, much like what Cutcliffe inherited, a program that just, you know, again, that's the Swiss, right? I keep telling you, it's like, oh, great, you only 3-8, don't worry, you'll come back next year, you'll be fine. The fact that he won an ACC championship, and I know the league was in a weird spot. Clemson wasn't Clemson. Florida State wasn't Florida State. And Virginia Tech was really kind of the team that, hey, everybody jump on the Hokie bandwagon, they're going to lead the way. But for Wake Forest to win an ACC championship this century, that guy right there, number one, he's a tremendous person. He's a great guy, a perfect fit for the institution. And I just always thought he was a great football coach. And I always used to kid him after they won the ACC championship, he'll never pay for another meal in his life in Winston-Salem. But the guy's a big-time coach. And I'll tell you what, the guy that replaced him with Dave Clawson now, Dave Clawson hasn't won an ACC title, but in my opinion, that's another guy that has inherited a situation where he understands what the institution is. He doesn't cut any corners.
Yep.
He respects the academic premise, and he's gone out and he's done it his way and has had incredible success. I am a huge Dave Clawson fan. And, you know, Wake's done a really nice job there. I mean, Jim Grubb, Dave Clawson, that's a pretty good 1-2 combination for a school with, you know, just a few thousand in enrollment, kind of playing the uphill battle versus other folks that are got 80,000 folks in the stands. academics are legit. They don't cut corners. He is a big-time coach. And Wake's done a nice job in that department.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Wes, you mentioned David Coburn made his debut on our show yesterday, director of athletics at Florida State. He addressed a number of issues, and in case you missed it, we're going to kind of give you a refresher course on this. We kind of started about name, image, and likeness because it is absolutely a real deal, and it's definitely happening in the great state of Florida. We talked to David about Apex and how it's going to help student-athletes at Florida State and how that's going to become now the norm on the landscape in college athletics.
We wanted to get out ahead if we could, position ourselves to serve our student-athletes very well now, but be able to respond when Congress and the NCAA actually take action down the road.
If you could, David, let's talk about the education process here on two fronts. The education process for the student-athlete and what they've got to understand about the ability to, I guess, monetize their name, image, and likeness. But at the same time, too, I got to believe there's an education process for you and your staff and in particular the coaches about the way this will impact their day-to-day, right?
Absolutely. We spent close to a year working on the ins and outs of this thing, trying to figure out the best vendor to go with, what were the positives, the negatives, what we needed to know. And as you know, with all the uncertainty, it was really difficult to decide what direction we wanted to go and what vendor we wanted to use because you're not sure what you want to buy because you're not sure what you're going to be able to use until some of this stuff gets settled.
David, can you get so far ahead of the game that you may have to be in neutral by the time the NCAA gets around to going, oh, by the way, here's how we're going to handle that? I mean, how do you handle that as a forerunner here? I mean, because you are really ahead of the game.
Well, as you've already discussed, we have a state law in Florida, and we're going to obey the state law. It's actually a pretty reasonable law. And I think that what it allows us to do is provide education and content creation services to these student athletes right now. And that's where we're going to focus until it becomes a little more clear what else we can do.
I want to ask you, based on your experiences in government, and I know that you've represented Florida State not only as director of athletics, but you've done a lot of things tied to the Capitol and certainly government relations for the Institute before making this move over. Do you just kind of shake your head and go, wow, I never thought this combination would collide like it's colliding right now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very, very difficult to foresee this kind of a situation developing the way it has at the national and the state level. But we think we have a pretty clear path here in Florida, and we're going to move ahead. I think it's going to be a real advantage for our student athletes.
David, speaking of moving ahead, we watched the spring game over the weekend. And you and I were talking during the break about Mackenzie Milton, how cool it was just to see him playing football again. And he's going to be a great addition to Mike Norvell's staff. What do you foresee football looking like as far as attendance, fans, tailgating? Are we back to normal? We hope to be. Is it going to be 50-50? I mean, I know we're sitting here in the middle of April, but this is going to be an ongoing deal in terms of season ticket holders and everything else. What do you think it's going to look like this fall?
Well, that's one of those crystal ball deals, but our medical people tell us that it's basically a race between the vaccine and the virus. We're betting on the vaccine. I think everybody in the country is betting on the vaccine in athletics. We're planning for full stadiums and full arenas. And financially, I think we're all in a position where we pretty much have to have that. So we're really looking forward to the fall. I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that Mackenzie would be an interesting addition to Coach Norvell's staff. I know that was a slip of the tongue, but he really has done an amazing job in that quarterback room. It is almost like having a staff member. Real leadership coming from that kid.
He's a great story.
The conversations you've had with other associates around the country, whether it be in the ACC or elsewhere, and you got to deal with the reality, and that is, what happens if we can't get back to full stadiums? What's the impact it's going to have on college athletics? If hey, all right, we got 50-50 for argument's sake, just for the sake of this conversation, what happens then?
Well, the financial effects begin to snowball on you, I think. Everyone is trying to manage the financial effects this year, and I think it's going to have impacts down the road for all of us. But if we can't get back to full stadiums next year, the situation financially just becomes that much more serious for all of us. And I'm not sure for a lot of schools that it'll be manageable, frankly.
Yeah, the idea too, and I don't want to – athletic departments and athletic associations are components of institutions. The institutions have also been hit too. We don't hear as much about that, obviously, on the streets that we walk, but that's also important to remember too, I guess.
Right, because state legislatures, by and large, are meeting now. They started meeting in January. They meet through the first part of the year. So they're passing appropriations bills that are impacting university budgets now, and that's happening all over the country. So we're now beginning to see the real effects of that pandemic on state budgets, and what those budgets are going to mean for universities is, in my view, there's going to be very little wiggle room for them and very little ability for universities to help athletic departments.
What's your takeaway from this, David, about the last year and a half or so of college athletics and what we've been through and maybe kind of foreseeing what we're getting ready to go through?
Well, I think college athletics is changing forever. I think when you look at the Alston antitrust case, you look at transfers, you look at name, image, and likeness, and the way these issues are all coming together at one time, I think the impacts are going to be immense and lasting. And I think if we aren't prepared to make changes, we're going to have serious problems in this industry.
Wise words from David Coburn yesterday on the show. He speaks the truth.
Would you like to take that interview we had yesterday morning with your interview yesterday afternoon with Joe Castiglione on off campus and marry those two together and then talk about where we are from a business perspective in college athletics and how important it is that 21 get as normal as possible for these guys?
Yeah, Joe Castiglione runs a show at Oklahoma. He was on our off-campus show yesterday, and Joe comes on maybe twice a year. And I think he's one of the brightest, smartest leaders that we've got in college athletics. And I even brought up David Coburn's comment on our show yesterday to Joe about attendance and what's the fall going to look like. And Joe said, hey, we are moving. He said almost the same thing David did. We're going to move forward as if we can have a full stadium, but we're going to also be able to pivot if in case the medical folks say, listen, this is not a safe thing to do. Or we find out our own season ticket holders, boosters go, we're not comfortable coming back to the stadium, which is another issue we haven't even addressed yet. But Joe spoke very similarly to David in a sense that, yeah, there is no question that the financial ramifications of what we've already been through are going to affect college athletics for 2 to 3 years down the road. He goes, just because 2020 is over with from a football and a basketball perspective, don't think for a second that that's not going to have a situation that every single athletic director in the country is going to have to deal with from a financial standpoint because of lost revenues and just the change in the landscape that we're through, and we're still in a pandemic. So he said, you know, we're not out of the woods yet. Are we in a better spot? No question. There's no doubt the vaccine is a positive thing. But to think that these athletic departments across the board, and, you know, this is true whether we're talking about the ACC, the Big 12, or anybody else for that matter, you're going to feel it. And so they're moving forward just like David talked about yesterday here on the show. that we're going to move forward, hopefully have full stadiums, knock on wood, and that the vaccine is going to be helpful. But, you know, people are still going to have to get comfortable being in that position, Wes. And we really haven't gotten into that. Yeah. I'm sure we will as the summer goes on.
That's right.
But, you know, what is the comfort level of a fan? You know, now that we, if you got the vaccine, you feel more comfortable, you're going to restaurants, maybe you're not. You know, everybody's got a different opinion. There's no right answer, no wrong answer. You got to do what you are comfortable to do. And if you're going to a stadium like Death Valley that's got 82,000, or if you're going to go to Duke where there's going to be 30,000, are you comfortable going to a game? The fans going to have to figure that thing out as we progress. But I am encouraged, though, with where we are from a society standpoint and the fact of the vaccine versus the virus. As David Coburn said yesterday, I thought he said a lot of smart things on the show yesterday, but the vaccine versus the virus is really going to be the determinant of how we move forward here this fall. But it's going to be critical that we get everybody kind of back to normal ASAP.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
David Coburn, though, yesterday... Let's go back to that a second, because I think there's some pieces of this. I think it's important for fans to understand the big picture of what these athletic departments, Wes, are going through. For the transfer portal is one issue. Name, image, and likeness is going to be a big, big deal, which David talked about. But just getting people back in the stands and getting comfortable again, tailgating, hanging out, socializing, doing what you used to do you know, a couple years ago before this pandemic hit us last March. Mentally, folks are going to have to get over the hurdle, too, up and above all this stuff.
Our medical people tell us that it's basically a race between the vaccine and the virus. We're betting on the vaccine. I think everybody in the country is betting on the vaccine in athletics. We're planning for full stadiums and full arenas. And financially, I think we're all in a position where we pretty much have to have that.
As you were saying, Wes.
I think that what he talked about yesterday was really important from this standpoint. One, he knows the monetary deal involved in full stadiums, right? And that's financials. And what do you always say? This, we can say it's not about the money, but it's about the money, right?
It's always about the money.
Yeah. In this particular case, just think of 2 years ago when you would go to a football game and now when you go to a football game. And there is, and I used this term a lot last fall when we were talking about this, there has to be a comfort and a confidence level. Now let's add on the layer of you've got to be willing to invest what you invested before, right? I mean, not just your time and your energy, but your financials. And for all of us, regardless of the school or the conference, that's going to be a critical piece of this. That's the next step, if you will. I mean, we all saw a week ago, what was it, the Texas Rangers open up in front of 40-some thousand shoulder-to-shoulder, right, Pac?
Yep.
You know, we want that to be what ACC football is, but it's going to be staggered. I have no doubt in my mind that that's going to be staggered by the time we get around to it, but can we get there? I do believe we can get there. And I thought he hit it right on the head when he said it's a kind of a race of the vaccine against the virus and we're going to bet on the vaccine. I think we're all betting on the vaccine. But at the same time, I also think, too, if you're in David Coburn's chair, we mentioned Joe Castiglione at Oklahoma, Dan Radakovich at Clemson, Bubba, any of these athletic directors in the ACC, it's Tyree at Louisville, who'd love to have people shoulder to shoulder at Cardinal Stadium. I think you have to also be willing to accept a percentage of people that are not going to be as aggressive in coming back. And what does that mean? And what's that percentage going to look like? Because it's going to be a variable at every institution I think we're looking at, not just in the ACC, but nationally as well. The product lines, the young people, the coaching, all that's going to be the same. Game experience, let's hope it's all the same. But the return factor, it's going to be different, I think. And we all have to understand that. It's going to be different at different places.
Well, I think you see that around the country. I mean, your example of the Texas Rangers versus other venues in Major League Baseball is a perfect snapshot of what we're talking about. Baseball's got to deal with it now. The advantage college football has is we get started in September. And who knows what kind of advancements we make between now and then from a medical standpoint in terms of the comfort level for folks to kind of get back into the flow of what they do from a societal standpoint. So, again, much like the patience that I think we saw last year with the true leaders in college athletics from a commissioner standpoint, whether we're talking about, you know, Swofford or Greg Sankey or Bob Bowlesby down the list, who said, hey, be patient. We got a plan. You know, we've got time. Let's see how this plays out. I think that's still in play now, even though we're in a much better spot today than we were last year in mid-April. But I think, again, smart leadership, patience, understanding what the medical folks are telling you, be smart about it, go about your business. Hopefully, you know, we keep getting better and better, more vaccines. And like David Coburn said yesterday, we'll take the vaccine over the virus. We're going to count on it. But I think his point, though, in the big picture is college athletics needs everybody back. And that really is important. So if you're a fan out there, you're a season ticket holder, a booster, whatever the case may be, you know, the quicker that you can kind of get comfortable saying, hey, listen, I'm good to leave the house and go about and do my thing. And hey, what feels good in Florida may be totally different in New York in terms of what our footprint is here in the ACC. You got to deal with it. Again, what works in Florida may not work in New York or vice versa. So I think there is going to be a little bit of a difference until universally we're good to go. You got the green light. Let's let it rip. So I think it's going to be an interesting storyline as we move into May, June, and July, just to see how the medical profession's doing and how it's going to have a trickle-down effect to college athletics.
Yeah. One more piece of business here before we get to the 8 o'clock hour. We'll go around the ACC, and we'll show you the video later that they launched in conjunction with this. Second school in as many days. Yesterday, though, the University of North Carolina announced the relationship between its athletics department and the Brander Group to create landmark group player rights programs for alumni. This initiative allows former student-athletes, in conjunction with their alma mater, to voluntarily participate in group player rights program, first of its kind for former college athletes, and will allow participants to profit from their marketability. Now, you notice it's alumni, right, Pac?
Yep.
Come on now. This is the first half step, and you talk about former alums. You'll see in the video, Carolina had a bunch of them sign up, and it's impressive. I mean, this part of it, we're going to have to focus on here in the offseason.
I think it's a very creative approach, and I know there's going to be people that are completely turned off by this. I get it. I really do. I mean, you're like, hey, that's not the college athletics I grew up with. You're right. You would be 1 trillion percent correct. And let me explain something to folks in that category. That was yesteryear. Here's where we're going now. So the sooner you embrace it, or perhaps you're just saying, hey, that's not for me. And there's going to be a percentage of people that give this the Heisman pose and stiff arm and go, I'll never support that again. That's up to you. But this is the world that we're now living in. Like I said, we are not even on the doorstep anymore of change. We're in change. So I thought this was a really creative approach by the alums at the University of North Carolina. And you're going to see others too. It's going to be, for somebody who's got a marketing, I love marketing. I think it's, to watch the creativity is really cool. So I got a kick out of seeing this. Just like I was like, that's a really smart move. So again, what does it generate dollars? I have no idea. We're going to find out. We're going to find out just how it's going to affect all this stuff with name, image, and likeness. Are student athletes going to get rich off it? I don't know. You know, maybe one or two could. Maybe a bunch of them do. I hope everybody gets something out of it, one way or the other. But it's a very, very interesting time that we're living in.
Here in 363 shows, we've had great cooperation from sports information folks and athletic departments across the ACC footprint. And we're looking forward to moving into the fall and here in the summer to tackle some of these topics. But let me save our good folks in production a step here. If you're at one of these institutions and you're going to cut loose one of these videos, just go ahead and email it to us.
Yeah, we're going to play it.
We want to show it. Yeah. I mean, we want to show it. Will you just, if you wouldn't mind, just go ahead and send it to us so we don't have to go through two or three hoops.
And you know, we played the Florida State Apex video yesterday, and it was cool. If you were a 16, 17, 18-year-old potential student athlete that, hey, I'm a big-time player, he or she, and you saw that video, you'd go, man, right. Where do I sign up for that? That looked pretty cool. And every school is going to eventually do this because it's happening. This name, image, and likeness is a real thing. So when the schools produce stuff, we're going to play it. So you're right. If you've got something good to go, just send it to us. We'll take care of you one way or the other.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.